Running a call center is tough. Leading a sales team is a challenge. Luckily, your hosts know what it takes to succeed. What you can expect from your two guides? Conversations that won't be overly scripted. Definitely not salesy or boring. Just filled with as much value as possible. Each week, Jason and Oliver will bring you topics to help scale your team, increase profits, and actually feel like you are winning. So, if you are ready to up your game and become the best in the business, tune in, take notes, and be prepared to learn. And here they are with another episode of Call Center Confidence. It's Jason Cutter and Oliver Katt.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Thanks for tuning in. Welcome to Call Center Confidence with Cutter and Katt. I am Jason Cutter. I'm joined with my friend, Oliver Katt, who's here. This is Season 2, Episode 9. If you have been a loyal listener of the show, then what you're going to notice is today is going to be a little bit different. If you're new here, welcome. Welcome to the Call Center Confidence with Cutter and Katt family. This should be a fun show. This will be a great show to start with if you haven't had exposure to any of our content. We're going to do things a little bit different. Before we get into that, though, I just want to make sure wherever you're watching this or listening to it, whether it's Facebook, it's LinkedIn, it's on the YouTube channel, it could be on the Call Center Confidence with Cutter and Katt podcast, make sure that you are engaged with this. If you're watching it live or the replay, leave us a comment. Hit like, share this. If you're listening on the replay, make sure to subscribe. Subscribe on the YouTube channel, everywhere, because all of this helps get more of this out there so we can help more people who are running call centers, who are in leadership roles, and helping them succeed at what they're dealing with. And they're dealing with salespeople, which is always challenging. Anyone who's in that role knows that. So here's what we're doing today, and then we'll kick it off, is that in Season 2, in the first 8 episodes, we kind of made it a mini series. Oliver and I decided, like, here's some of the hot kind of focused areas, some of the things that we really want to cover in the life cycle of having a team and being a leader from 1 to 8, right? Like, here's the categories. Season 1 was about just lots of things in that whole life cycle. Season 2 was shorter. Here, episode 9, we're pivoting a bunch, and we wanted to field questions that we receive, that we've received individually, that we receive in training, in coaching and leadership meetings with our clients, as well as just what we see online, some people out there just looking for help. And so we've compiled that. So Oliver, here we go. Are you excited? Are you ready? As we kind of go into Q&A mode.
Yeah, I'm always excited. That was a mouthful of an intro. I'm going to give you kudos to that. You know, you got through that straight. I know I would have messed that up a million times. But yes, we are kicking it off, Season 2, Episode 9 with Q&A. And boy, do we have a lot of questions for you for this next part of the season. We're not going to get through them all today. I can guarantee you that right now. But we're going to get through as many as we can with every episode. And like I say, these are questions that we have been asked throughout everything that we've been doing. Predominantly, it's been asked throughout training. It's been asked, as Jason was talking about, where we've done live episodes. And we've compiled that because what we want is we want to create that top tip, top takeaway episodes that you can actually go away and do something productive with straight off the bat. And what we're doing today is we're going to be talking about leadership. So without further ado, we're going to jump straight into question number one. We're going to take it in turns to answer these and get through as much as we can as quickly as we can. So question number one for Jason. When I was in sales, I worked hard because I was driven to succeed and make money. But it seems like reps now don't have that same desire to put the effort in. How can I motivate them like I was motivated?
So that one, that's such a big one. And I see that one all the time. And with this kind of a question, usually where it's coming from is somebody who was in sales. They were effective. They were successful. They closed lots of deals. They made lots of money. That company moved them up and said, hey, you should be able to do it for other people. Or they wanted to move up. And what happens is they now have a team of people who aren't quite playing at the same level they are. And it's usually a couple of things. One is they could be inheriting a team that was struggling. That's why they needed a leader. That's why that person was then promoted. And they've got a bunch of people who you know, if you watch sports movies, like hero sports movies, the Mighty Ducks, the Bad News Bears, the Sandlot, you got some kind of group of ragtag salespeople there who aren't quite focused like you were. The biggest thing is to understand that everybody is different. Everyone is driven by different things. What might feel like they're not putting in the same amount of effort is maybe they're just not driven in the same ways. It's why one of the biggest leadership books that I recommend is The Five Love Languages, which they wrote a second version, which is Five Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace, which is a little more appropriate. But that one is great. It's when you're in a leadership role, one of the best things you can do is first understand who you have on the team, what makes them tick, what motivates them, what drives them, what is it that they want, what is on their vision board. So many different things that you want to understand, but how do they feel appreciated? What are they ultimately going after? And then once you understand that, it's about appreciating that, because everyone's going to be motivated by different things. Trying to have a team full of people that are all motivated to work hard in the same way that you were, maybe by money alone, it's really challenging to do, and you might not have inherited that. Doesn't mean what you have is not effective or can't be successful on your team. It's that maybe everyone just responds differently, right? Maybe happy hours, golf outings, spiffs, contests, those kind of things don't motivate everyone the same way they might have motivated you. And so you've got to figure that out. And really the best thing for motivating people is to find out what they want, why they want it, and then see if that's something you can support them on, and does it fit with the organization?
Love that. Great top tips there to take away. I mean, I really want to echo what you said there. And I just want to add a couple of things, in a sense that I think the biggest thing that everybody needs to realize in those situations is you can't please everybody. When you try and do something en masse, you are not going to hit everyone. And that's why, Jason, as you said, it's so important to find out individually what they need, what motivates them. We all know the generation gap of people coming through the different environments, especially working in contact centers. Everybody has changed. You know, not everybody wants to work in a contact center now. Not everybody feels that it's the right job or career choice for them. But I think for those people that you do get through the door, it is imperative that you spend time with them, you coach them, you understand them, and you understand their needs and their wants. Some of the best contact center managers I have worked with know their team inside and out. They can have personal conversations with them as well as work conversations. They know when to draw the line, obviously, because you don't want to kind of cross that line in different circumstances, but you know what motivates them, you know what gets them out of the bed at the end of the day, and you know what you're going to be able to offer them for any reward or recognition that may come down the line. So yeah, Jason, great point, great takeaway. And for those of you out there, if you can do that and you can understand your team at all levels, you're onto a winner straight away.
Yeah. And if you want more on this, because we did several episodes in the season one and season two on this, email us info@callcenterconfidence.com. And we can send you the links for those if you want to dive in more, because obviously it's a lot to try to cover in this. So let us know if you want that or guidance on anything. I actually have an ebook on this as well about motivating your team. So there's some things in there to understand. And then also, like Oliver said, when is it not going to work? So let's go into the second question here. Let's just keep on rolling. So Oliver, the next question is, what tools can you use to spot training needs, right? Like, is it KPIs? Is it attrition? Is it churn? What is it that you're looking for, and what tools can you use in place to try to find where the team needs some help?
So I get asked this question a lot, especially when I'm working with forums for leadership or doing any leadership training. And I think it's a really important question, because not everybody understands what you have access to or what you don't have access to. So when you talk about tools, a lot of people instantly think, oh, I haven't got that tech stack in place, or I haven't got the system in place, or I haven't got the management information in place. And it isn't necessarily anything, you know, about that. I think training needs are so varied in what you are looking for, especially in a contact center, whether it's sales, service, you know, customer support, CX, technical support, whatever you're looking for. And I think to understand and spot training needs, all you need is really basic elemental reporting in place. You know, we're looking at things like, are they converting? Have they got great AHT? You look at your metrics, and you can kind of build your skills around that metrics database that you're looking for. Secondly, you've also got other things in there when it comes to absence, attrition, churn. You can use these to understand why people leave. I think one of the biggest things that people don't use that they have at their disposal in every single company that I've worked for is exit interviews. I don't know why they're not used enough or often, or to be fair, most of those reports never actually leave the HR office. So if you've got a HR office that deal with exit interviews, go and find out exactly what it is you're looking for. There is so many different things you can utilize on a day-to-day basis to pull that information. Coaching reports, appraisals, one-on-ones. Just understand, again, understanding your team, what I said a few moments ago, will allow you to really kind of put that into place. And then once you've got that information, I think the biggest takeaway here is for you to actually build a skills matrix and understand what skills your team have based on the role that they're doing. So get the job description, get any information related to what they have to do on a daily basis, and then basically put it in an Excel spreadsheet and say, does this person have all of these skills that are required to do the job? If not, let's put them in training. Let's understand that. Don't just put them in training for training's sake. That's a big one.
Yeah. And I love that about the exit interviews. Definitely doesn't get done enough, especially when someone leaves sales, whether they're moved out or they just quit. You know, usually it's like they're just gone and everyone's moving on, or they think that person is to blame. One big thing with that is just always keep that feedback in mind and in perspective to that employee and how well they did. If they weren't very good at what they did, take what they tell you with kind of a grain of salt of where, who or what they're blaming for why they weren't effective. Some of it might ring true, some of it might not. The one thing I would add to this as far as tools to help you spot where the training needs are when we're talking about sales and selling effectiveness specifically is you want to make sure that your KPI, your phone system is set up so that you have markers in place for all of the milestones in a successful sales conversation, right? So if you have, if it's a 30-minute phone call that's a sale, you want to, like, you know, the intro, the you know, discovery questions, the giving them a quote or whatever it looks like to getting an agreement signed to wherever. You want to know what those milestones are, and then you want to be able to track and report on how well the reps are getting through and what their conversions are from one stage to another over their pipeline, so you know where the training needs are, right? If somebody has a lot of people they're doing intros on, but they're not really getting to the quoting section, then you know that you need more training in that. So I think that would be the one part I would add to.
Yeah, I think that's a really great part. And to kind of touch on that, if you're a contact center that has any kind of speech analytics that can actually pull reports on that, you are onto a winner straight away. Your tech stack can help massively with that if you've got something in place. So many systems out there, not expensive and easy to use, especially the ones that give you live coaching tips and actionable takeaways from every single call. So if you want to know more about that, we've got access to a lot of different platforms. So give us a shout and let us know. But moving into question number three, and talking of attrition and churn on the last one, is a great question that we got recently, is what is an acceptable amount of turnover? Specifically, ours feels high, but it might not be. I'm not sure. What does it look like?
Yeah, oh, that's such a loaded one. And I was hoping you were going to have to answer this one first and not me. So here's the thing. Obviously, there's no one thing. There's no one acceptable turnover. Every call center, every sales team, every vertical, every location is going to be different. But really, you know, you look at the stats and a really high sales turnover could be 30%, 40% year over year. It's really, in my opinion, here's how I answer this question, which isn't with a specific stat, which is helping somebody, is what I was taught years and years ago is that if we're talking about having to let someone go and fire somebody, is that if we have to fire somebody because they're not effective, we as a company failed. That's what it comes down to. It means we failed to hire the right person and we chose the wrong person for the role, and that's on us. Or we failed them through training, through management, through support, through tools, and we let them down and we had to fire them. Or if they're quitting because they're quitting before we would fire them for performance, I treat that the same way. So really, that's what it comes down to. You know your turnover is high if you find yourself having to fire people for non-performance, because at almost any level, because that means you've let them down. Now, of course, there are going to be people who they're just not going to, they're going to interview well, they're going to sell you on how amazing they are. You put them in the seat and they just suck, or they're not trying. And that's happened to all of us. But even then, is the key is, how do you interview better? How do you interview smarter? How do you set up more hoops for them to jump through, which is a lot of things that Oliver and I consult with companies on, is building the right recruiting process so that you aren't firing people who are the wrong fit that snuck through. And then it's about having all that other support. So again, there's no clear number. I'm not going to say the number is zero for turnover, because life happens. But if you find yourself firing people, even on a regular basis, that you should take responsibility as an organization, because that's on you. Again, you either put the wrong people in the boat, or you didn't help keep them supported and alive in the boat.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I mean, look, the first word in there that I think stands out for me is, what is an acceptable amount of turnover and churn? No one's ever going to sit there and say it's acceptable. And as you say, I agree with the whole, if you're looking at firing people, then you need to review it. The fact is, there are a lot of people that don't realize how many people are churning in and out on a daily, weekly, monthly, or yearly basis. They physically don't track it. And these are where your hidden costs come into play. This is where companies lose money through recruitment, because they're just bringing people back into backfill left, right, and center. And you know, they don't look at those numbers. Now, again, is it 2%? Is it 5%? Is it 20%? Every single company is different. The only thing I will say is, look at historical, look back at your reporting, go back to the people that have left, and start to build a number that looks viable for you. So what have you seen on a yearly basis leave the business over the last 5 years? And if you can go 5 years, 10 years, whatever it is, if you've got those numbers, great, because now you can set an acceptable line. And then when you start to go over that average, when you start to go over that number, then you think, okay, well, now I need to look at why we're churning people. Look at the reasons why people are leaving, or why you're firing them. And as Jason said, are you doing them a disservice or an injustice, because you're letting people go because you haven't trained them, you haven't supported them? So I think, first and foremost, build a metric, build a number, manage it, look at historical, and then find out how you're going to come out of this moving forward, and then what you and your team around you can do to help curb that number or keep it where it is.
Yeah, and I think one thing to add to that, because I see a lot of times where there's benchmarking or there's industry metrics. It's like others in the industry have this kind of a turnover or this kind of success, whatever it looks like. I would always be very cautious of that. I know of companies who they have a very high tolerance for very high turnover, and they see that as okay. Some companies that are well known in a vertical or an industry that have high turnover, but because they've reached a certain economy of scale, they can stomach it, and that's okay. Just be very careful of trying to compare and say, well, this is what our industry does, so this is okay. Here's what I'll tell you, and Oliver will echo this, is that a lot of companies, especially that we see, are not built on a solid foundation. So just because everybody else is having X amount of turnover doesn't mean that's what's acceptable. It just means there's a lot of people out there who aren't building scalable call center sales operations, and they're essentially just not running it like an operation. They're just playing sales.
Absolutely.
Okay,
go for the next question. I think we've got time for one more.
All right, let's do one more here. So, and this is an easy one. How do I get my reps to make more calls?
I'm just going to bottom line this with one quote. If you can't measure it, you can't manage it. Bottom line, I think you've heard us preach that quote for years. That was drilled into me in my very first contact center, even as a sales rep before moving into leadership and moving into management. Look, first and foremost, how do you get your reps to make more calls? You need to look at that. Actually, are they making the right quota? Are they hitting the right number? And are they spending the right time or the right amount of productivity on the phone? You've got to look at your stats. You've got to look at your management information and then review that. If you physically feel that sales rep A is making 10 calls less than they should be making on a daily basis, evidence it. Get it down on paper, record it, show that everybody else is hitting that right quota, that right amount of number, and everything else around them. Because if they are not hitting that number, you can physically show them. And I think that is how you're going to make a difference. And I think a truck has just gone past my house. But yeah, you need to physically evidence it. And, you know, again, if you can't evidence it, you can't encourage them to make more calls. And I think for me, that's the bottom line. I'm not even going to go into too much detail on this question because, again, show it. Show them that they can do better. And if not, then you need to manage them out of the business, move on, get somebody else in, and get them to where they need to be. But again, it's all down to the team, not just the individual.
Yeah. I will take that to one additional level, which is what we talked about in the very first question about motivating your team, is you've got to know why that individual wants to succeed and what success looks like to them. How much money do they want to make? Working backwards into how many deals they'll need to close, working backwards into what you know as a business it takes to get that done. So the number of calls it takes to close one sale and what that looks like. And then you need to get that person, each of your sales reps, bought in on their goal monetarily, and then the steps it takes to get there, which then breaks down to number of calls per day. Then you have to have the metrics, the objective numbers, not the subjective, hey, let's all make more calls, but here's what it takes. And then you need to tie that in with them regularly in your one-on-ones every day, looking backwards if you have to with them, which is you said you wanted to make X. You committed to making 50 calls a day. Yesterday, you made 36. What happened? How can I support you? What's in the way? How many are you going to do today? Is this still your goal and do you still care? Is this important to you? Okay, now go, right? And then it's on them for their goals and their reasons. And if they still fail to do it, either you need a better system in place, something might be broken that's making it so they can't make more dials, or you have the wrong people.
Yeah. And to just to add to that as well, you know, I think it's important to realize, and this is why we talk about metrics, this is why we talk about KPIs, is they may have done 35 calls for that day, but look at their average handling time, look at their close rates, look at what they're putting through. Because if they are physically making sales, but you want them to make more sales by throwing more calls at them, then the quality of the sales they're putting through in the first place may drop. So you also need to juggle which metrics and which KPIs are more important to you at the time. So there's a lot of different ways to look at it. Jason and I have spent many, many years looking at stats exactly like this. So if you ever feel that your reps aren't hitting those numbers or they need direction in that, please let us know, get in touch, and we can show you exactly what you need to put in place and how you can actually drive that forward. But we've run out of time, Jason. Look, we got through four questions. We planned more than this for today. So we're definitely going to have to bake these into more episodes, right?
Yeah, I'm quite impressed and surprised. You snuck that fourth one in there and we got through pretty quick. I thought, knowing you and I, that we were going to get through maybe one and a half questions in 20 minutes. So I'm excited. I'm happy. We got a lot more, from leaders to salespeople to managers to just general call center questions, a whole bunch of things that people throw at us all the time. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's important just to remind every single person out there, if you are listening to this episode, or, you know, episode 10, 11, 12, as we go through the Q&A series, if there are more questions, please send them to us, because you're going to be listening to your questions already in these episodes. Keep them coming, because if we realize that we're getting more questions, we're just going to keep doing the quick fire rounds, because that's what you want to know. These are the top tips that you want answered. We'll answer them. But look, it's been great. We're glad that we've given you all of these top tips for today. Don't forget to follow us on all of the social media channels on LinkedIn. Follow both Jason and myself across all of the platforms. Don't forget to listen to the podcast. We're on every single podcast provider, or check us out on our website at callcenterconfidence.com. In the meantime, stay tuned for next week's episode, when we're going to bring you more questions about leadership and more top tips. But thank you very much, Jason, once again, as always, for being on Call Center Confidence with Cutter and Kat. And for myself, we'll see you next week. Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of the Call Center Confidence Show with Cutter and Kat. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. We really appreciate that effort. For more info about the show, you can always go to www.callcenterconfidence.com. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.